Imagine writing a check for like $50 million to just completely overhaul your enterprise's technology.
Oh, man.
Right. You spend 2 years in these exhausting meetings, you're migrating data, training staff.
Yeah.
And at the end of it all, your core processes are just as slow, but now they are also incredibly complicated.
Right, which is the worst case scenario.
Exactly. And that is the grim reality for a shocking number of companies. I mean, over 90% of enterprises are pursuing digital transformation right now. But according to the sources we're unpacking today, fewer than one in three actually succeeds at scale.
Yeah, it is a stunning failure rate, especially when you consider the sheer amount of capital and, human bandwidth being thrown at the problem. We aren't talking about small missteps here. We're talking about massive structural initiatives that just vaporize value.
Vaporize value. I like that. Or hate it, I guess. But that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. We are going to deconstruct a comprehensive guide we received on digital transformation consulting. We really need to figure out what real transformation actually looks like, why internal efforts consistently hit a brick wall, and, how bringing in the right outside expertise can completely invert those odds.
Yeah, definitely.
Because as I was reading through the source material, I realized that buying expensive enterprise software to fix a broken business is, it's like buying a high-end treadmill and expecting it to instantly give you the ability to run a marathon.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, like organizations will drop millions on shiny new tools, but they entirely underinvest in the thinking, the structure, and really the behavioral change required to actually make them work.
The treadmill analogy is highly accurate. Because the first thing our sources do is they demolish this myth of the IT upgrade. Digital transformation is not a software purchase. It's the fundamental redesign of how a business operates, and it relies on three interconnected dimensions.
Okay, lay those out for us.
So first is strategy, which means explicitly tying technology to a business outcome, not just adopting tech because, your competitors did.
Yeah, the FOMO approach.
Exactly, the FOMO approach. Then second is execution. So that's the actual technical fidelity of building and integrating the systems. And third is adoption, engineering the environment so that human beings will actually alter their daily routines to use the tools.
Okay, but if the definition is that clear across, strategy, execution, and adoption, why do organizations that are packed with brilliant executives and massive budgets fail so spectacularly when they try to do this themselves?
Well, the fatal flaw usually comes down to the difference between digital strategy and digital transformation. A lot of internal teams or even, traditional strategy consultants, they can build a brilliant strategy. They deliver a gorgeous slide deck that points the company toward a future state.
Right, everyone loves a good slide deck.
Right. But digital transformation consulting is about the mechanics of crossing the chasm. It translates that abstract roadmap into code, it manages the psychological resistance of the workforce, and it tracks the financial results. Most companies just fundamentally lack the objective distance required to dismantle their own operations.
Okay, let's unpack this because my instinct as a business leader is to push back right there.
Sure.
The sources list five reasons organizations need outside consultants. And the first one claims that internal teams are too close to existing processes, so they normalize workarounds. But wait a minute, my team built those workarounds. They know every edge case, every quirk of our customer base, and where all the bodies are buried. Isn't that deep institutional knowledge a massive strategic advantage? Like, why would I want someone who doesn't know my business coming in to disrupt processes that frankly keep the lights on?
Because the goal isn't to keep the lights on. The goal is to rewire the building. Institutional knowledge is vital, yes. But when it comes to transformation, it actually acts as a blinder.
Interesting.
Think about it. When your team spends 5 years pulling data from a legacy database, pasting it into a spreadsheet, formatting it, and emailing it to a
Oh,
vendor,
yeah. We've all been there.
right? They stop seeing that as a broken, highly inefficient process. They just see it as doing their job.
It's just Tuesday.
Exactly. So a consultant's highest value is often their ignorance of your corporate culture. They walk in and ask the obvious structural question nobody inside is asking, like, why does a spreadsheet exist at all when an API could connect these two systems instantly? They haven't been conditioned to accept your dysfunction.
I see. So it's really about breaking the spell of routine. What are the other reasons we can't fix ourselves?
The second is compressing the learning curve. If you try to build a transformation vehicle from scratch internally, you're going to pay what the text calls the tuition of expensive trial and error.
Ah, the tuition. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, you discover all the classic failure modes the hard way. Consultants bring the third factor, which is pattern recognition.
Okay, what does that look like in practice?
Well, a top-tier consultant might look at a supply chain bottleneck in a healthcare company, and they solve it using a routing algorithm they implemented for a logistics company 3 years ago.
Oh, I see.
You just can't generate that cross-industry perspective internally.
That makes a lot of sense. You are basically renting their exposure to hundreds of other companies' mistakes and triumphs.
Exactly.
And the fourth reason in the text points straight to that treadmill analogy, the human bottleneck. It states unequivocally that technology is rarely the blocker. Human resistance is.
Precisely. Consultants impose a structured rigor on stakeholder engagement. They know how to identify the internal blockers, how to redesign incentive structures, and how to communicate value so the technology is actually adopted.
Right.
And finally, the fifth reason is de-risking the technology stack. If you choose an inflexible architecture on day one, you might not feel the pain until year three. And by then, undoing it is financially catastrophic. Outside consultants remain platform agnostic to prevent that exact lock-in.
Okay, so assuming a leadership team has that moment of clarity and they realize they are completely blind to their own normalized workarounds, how do they know if they are genuinely ready to bring a consultant in? I mean, I imagine you don't just call a firm because you feel like modernizing on a whim.
No. The sources outline a few critical self-assessment signals.
Okay.
One is a measurable loss of competitive ground.
Yeah.
Like you physically cannot launch products as fast as your rivals because your legacy systems require just too much manual coding.
Oh, yeah. That's a red flag.
A huge one. Another is relying entirely on reactive tech decisions. You only upgrade the server when it crashes, or you only buy new security software after a breach, rather than having a proactive posture.
Yeah, the signal that really stood out to me was about having clarity of the destination without knowing the route. The text asks, do we have a clear sense of where we need to change, but not how to get there? I think that is incredibly liberating for anyone listening who feels overwhelmed by this. Like, readiness doesn't require a perfectly scoped architectural blueprint. It just requires a crystallized business problem.
That is the absolute sweet spot for an engagement. You know, the pain point, for example, our customer onboarding takes 3 weeks instead of 3 days.
Right.
But you aren't dictating the technical solution before the experts arrive.
So the consultants walk through the door. What is the actual anatomy of the engagement? How does it play out mechanically?
Well, it follows a rigorous progression. It begins with a current state audit.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just asking executives what they think happens.
Because they probably don't know.
Right. This is mapping the actual digital infrastructure and data flows. It surfaces the unknown unknowns.
Okay.
That audit informs the roadmap phase, which prioritizes the sequence of initiatives based on business impact. Then you move into implementation, where the software is actually configured or built.
And then comes my favorite part.
Right, following that is change management, and finally, ongoing measurement to ensure the value doesn't degrade over time.
Yeah, I want to challenge the weight given to that fourth phase, though, change management. In a lot of corporate environments, that just translates to a mandatory Zoom training and a PDF manual.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But what's fascinating here is that the sources identify change management as the phase most frequently gutted when project budgets tighten.
Really?
Yes, yet empirical research proves that adoption, not selection, dictates the ultimate ROI.
Wow.
If you build a flawless cloud architecture, but you don't rewrite the job descriptions, adjust the employee KPIs, and establish continuous feedback loops, people will simply revert to their old spreadsheets.
And the system will just sit empty.
Exactly.
So we know the phases, we know the stakes, but the consulting market itself is totally saturated. You've got massive global integrators, boutique strategy shops, specialized dev agencies. How do you distinguish the elite consultants from the generic ones who are actively contributing to that 67% failure rate?
The differentiator is their point of origin. Elite consultants define success entirely in business terms.
Okay.
Metrics like customer lifetime value or gross margin improvement before a single software vendor is ever mentioned. They design the technical architecture backward from the required business outcome.
Rather than a generic firm coming in and saying, We specialize in deploying this specific cloud platform. Let's figure out how to justify stuffing your business into it.
Exactly. The generic approach retrofits a business case to justify a technology.
Right.
The elite approach uses technology strictly as a lever to achieve a business case. And this philosophical difference becomes glaringly obvious in how they structure the rollout.
How so?
Elite consultants refuse to participate in what the text calls the Big Bang transformation.
The Big Bang. This is the multi-year, behind-closed-doors initiative where a company tries to flip a switch on a Friday night and change the entire operating model by Monday morning.
Yes, it is a nightmare.
It really reminds me of, like, trying to swallow a whole watermelon at once.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, trying to replace the plumbing, the electrical wiring, and the foundation of a house all at the same time while the family is still living inside trying to cook dinner.
That is exactly what it's like. It is a recipe for cascading system failures. In a Big Bang approach, the scope inevitably creeps, the budget balloons, and because you go years without seeing any tangible ROI, executive fatigue sets in.
Yeah, they just get tired of writing the checks.
Right. The original strategic intent gets completely lost in the weeds of technical integration. So the antidote to the Big Bang is the phased roadmap.
Slicing the watermelon.
Yes, slicing the watermelon.
How thin do you slice it?
Elite consultants insist on demonstrating standalone value quickly. They aggressively target meaningful quick wins within the first 90 days of the engagement.
Okay, let me push back there. Can you genuinely transform anything meaningful in a global enterprise in just 90 days? I mean, that sounds like a marketing gimmick.
It does, but it's not about transforming the entire enterprise in 90 days. It's about engineering a specific, highly visible victory.
Okay, like what?
Maybe it's automating one incredibly painful manual reporting process for the finance team. The mechanism here is entirely psychological. A 90-day win builds organizational momentum.
Yeah.
It converts the skeptics. When the wider company sees a tangible improvement, they're much more willing to endure the inevitable friction that comes with the harder, more complex phases of the roadmap later on.
That makes total sense. You are manufacturing political capital to spend later.
Exactly.
Now, another hallmark of elite consultants mentioned in the sources is their strict discipline around when to configure an existing SaaS product versus when to build bespoke custom software.
Right. The classic build versus buy calculus. Yeah. A generic consultant will often let a client over-customize an off-the-shelf SaaS product to perfectly mimic their old dump-in processes.
Oh, just recreating the old spreadsheet in the cloud.
Precisely. And elite consultants know this is a trap. If you heavily customize a SaaS platform's underlying code, what happens when the provider rolls out a mandatory security update next year?
Everything breaks.
Your custom code fractures, the system breaks, and you have essentially engineered your own technical debt. Elite consultants force you to change your process to fit the software, reserving bespoke custom builds only for things that represent a unique competitive advantage.
Well, speaking of technical debt, we have to talk about the massive generative AI elephant in the room.
We do.
How is artificial intelligence physically altering this consulting landscape?
The acceleration is intense. Our sources note that 72% of companies are experimenting with AI daily.
Wow.
But the vast majority lack the architectural foundation and governance expertise to scale it securely. The demand for guidance is skyrocketing. And AI is actually altering the consulting engagements themselves in three profound ways.
Okay, let's break those down. What's the first one?
First is AI-powered process mining.
Process mining.
Yeah. Historically, mapping a company's workflows meant consultants spent weeks interviewing employees. And frankly, those employees often unintentionally lied about how they did their work.
Right. They tell you how they're supposed to do it, not how they actually do it.
Exactly. Now, consultants use AI to analyze the digital exhaust of a company. The event logs, the timestamps, and the ERP system. The AI visually maps exactly how work gets done, where the bottlenecks are, and where the silent workarounds live in a fraction of the time.
Wow. So the AI essentially acts as an objective truth serum for the current state audit.
It really does.
What is the second change?
Generative AI is no longer a fringe experiment. It is a core capability clients demand in their roadmaps. But you cannot deploy Gen AI at scale without sophisticated governance, data ethics, and security protocols.
Oh, absolutely.
Consultants are having to supply that specialized risk management framework.
Right.
And third, AI is enabling real-time dynamic KPIs.
Oh, instead of waiting for the quarterly report.
Right. Instead of waiting for a monthly or quarterly report to see if a transformation is working, AI algorithms flag adoption drop-offs or process inefficiencies the moment they occur.
That's incredible. But the sources do contain a very severe warning regarding AI. Rushing to adopt AI without fixing the underlying strategic foundation doesn't generate value. It generates catastrophic technical debt.
Yes.
It's like putting a rocket engine on a rusty bicycle.
Oh, that's a perfect visual.
The massive power of the AI doesn't fix the rusty chain. It just causes the whole thing to fly apart faster and more violently. If your data is siloed and your workflows are garbage, AI just scales that dysfunction at the speed of light.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a consultant's primary job in the current market is often to actively protect the client from their own premature AI investments.
Seriously?
Yes. The boardroom pressure to do something with AI is immense.
Right. Everyone's demanding it.
But if an elite consultant looks at your unstructured data lakes and broken compliance protocols, their job is to say, no, we have to fix the foundation first, or this tool will hallucinate wildly and expose proprietary data.
So whether we are talking about prepping the pipes for AI or just rolling out a traditional cloud system, how do you actually prove mathematically that the consultant's work is succeeding?
It's tough.
Because the text drops a terrifying statistic from Deloitte. 73% of business leaders admit their primary barrier to transformation is the sheer inability to define success metrics.
Yes.
Almost 3/4 of leaders are flying completely blind.
It is arguably the hardest part of the entire life cycle. Most companies only measure what is easy to see, or they measure it far too late. The framework the text provides to solve this hinges on separating leading indicators from lagging indicators.
Okay, let's clearly define the mechanics of those two.
Lagging indicators are the ultimate outcomes you want. Revenue growth, massive cost savings, and increase in customer retention.
Right.
The problem is, these take months or years to materialize. If you only track lagging indicators, by the time you realize they are dropping, the transformation has already failed.
Oh, I see.
Leading indicators, conversely, are the early predictive signals of future success. You can track them in days or weeks.
Give me a counterintuitive example of a leading indicator that internal teams miss but elite consultants track.
Support ticket volume for the old legacy system.
Oh, wait. Really?
Yeah. Think about it. If a company launches a new platform, internal teams often just track how many people logged into the new one. But an elite consultant watches the old system.
Because they want to see if people are going back.
Exactly. If the IT help desk is still getting hammered with requests to fix the old database a month after the new one launched, it is a glaring leading indicator that employees are resisting adoption and quietly reverting to their old workarounds.
Wow.
You can intervene immediately before productivity tanks.
So what does this all mean for the actual dashboard a leadership team should be looking at?
Well, the sources insist on a balanced scorecard across 4 distinct dimensions.
I'm assuming financial is first. Like, are we seeing ROI on the spend? And operational must be second. Is the cycle time faster? Are error rates down? But those seem like standard business metrics. What are the other two?
The third is customer experience. You can have a highly efficient internal operation that your customers absolutely hate.
Oh, right. Like an automated phone tree.
Perfect example. So you must measure net promoter score, or the adoption rate of digital self-service tools. Are the customers feeling the benefit?
Okay.
And the fourth, which ties back to our earlier point, is people and adoption. Measuring employee satisfaction with the new tools and tracking the speed of proficiency.
But the text notes that even with those 4 dimensions, organizations routinely sabotage their measurement through 2 specific errors.
Yes, they do. The first error is failing to establish a baseline before the implementation begins.
Really? People skip that.
It sounds shockingly simple. But companies get so excited about the future state that they forget to measure their current state. If you don't mathematically document how slow your onboarding process is today, you have no baseline to prove that the millions of dollars you spent actually improved anything.
You have to step on the scale before you start the diet, or the results are just a guess.
Precisely. And the second fatal error is tracking outputs instead of outcomes.
Let's clarify the difference, because those words get used interchangeably in corporate speak all the time.
They do. So an output is a milestone of delivery. We migrated the data to the cloud on schedule, or we trained 500 employees on the new software.
Right.
Those are outputs. An outcome is the actual business value generated by that delivery. Because the data is in the cloud, our supply chain forecasting is 20% more accurate, saving us $2 million a quarter.
This raises an important question for anyone listening who is currently overseeing one of these projects. When you cut a ribbon and have a party in the office, are you celebrating a system launch or are you celebrating actual business value?
Right.
Because delivering software on time is an output. Lowering customer churn is an outcome. Only outcomes justify the millions spent.
Exactly. You are bringing it all together perfectly.
Which perfectly summarizes the core underlying thesis of all these sources. The enterprises that actually survive and thrive during digital transformation, the 33% that succeed, do not treat this as a chaotic pile of disconnected IT projects.
No, they don't.
They treat strategic alignment, technical execution, human behavioral adoption, and rigorous measurement as a single, continuous, intertwined discipline. You cannot outsource one piece to a strategy firm, another piece to a coding shop, and leave change management to HR, expecting them all to magically align.
The integration of those elements is the entire ballgame. If the seams between those disciplines tear, the transformation fails.
So, for the learner out there listening to this deep dive right now, if you are prepping for a steering committee meeting tomorrow about a massive new tech initiative, you now possess the framework to ask the dangerous, productive questions.
Yes.
You don't have to be a software engineer to walk in and ask, hey, have we established our baselines yet? Or are we walking blindly into a big bang trap? Or can we carve out a 90-day quick win to build momentum? You now have the lens to see past the shiny new features of the platform and focus on the architecture of the change itself.
But as you take those frameworks into your meetings, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Okay.
We've established that the ultimate bottleneck to digital transformation isn't the code. It is human adoption and the disruption of comfortable routines.
Right.
But technology is now advancing so rapidly, especially with AI, that transformation can no longer be an episodic project with a tidy start and end date.
Wow.
So, what happens to a company's fundamental culture, to the psychology of its workforce, when the sheer pace of technological evolution dictates that transformation must become a permanent, continuous state of existence?
How do you keep an entire organization running when the finish line just keeps moving faster and faster? I guess it really does all come down to how well you understand the treadmill.
It sure does.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the mechanics of transformation. Keep asking the right questions, and we'll see you next time.